Hey guys, welcome to the 330 Sports Show. My name is Justin Coffin. Today is Thursday, April 14th, 2022. On today's show, we are going to talk Cleveland Cavaliers. They dropped a game against the Brooklyn Nets the other night, but they have a play-in game, win or go home game coming up against the Atlanta Hawks on Friday night. We'll talk about that in just a minute. We'll talk about the Cleveland Guardians. They are off to a really torrid last four games. So we'll talk about that. They have played six games this season. They have their home opener coming up on Friday night as well. So big night in Cleveland coming up on Friday. You got the Cavs and the Guardians right next door to each other, both going on roughly the same time as far as I know. And then the other team in Cleveland, Baker Mayfield is still a part of. He's guaranteed $18.9 million for next season. Still looking for a dance partner, if you will, to work out a trade for him. We'll talk about that. He appeared on the, I believe it's DYK podcast, Did You Know podcast, the other day. And I listened to about half of it. That's all I had time to listen to. So I kind of got through the early parts of his Texas Tech career into the Oklahoma days. I haven't quite got into the Browns portion of things yet. So that will be interesting. So if anybody out there has heard that and wants to chime in, feel free, leave a comment. But make sure to let us know what you're thinking. Anyway, let's start with the Cleveland Cavs. They took on the Brooklyn Nets the other night, and you know, the first quarter was awful. They were down 40-20 after the first quarter. Kyrie Irving comes out on fire, just making every contested shot. The Cavs defense plays much better into the second half. They cut it to down to 5 points with a few minutes to go, but weren't able to get the job done. Just dug themselves too big of a hole. So that puts them into a game with the Atlanta Hawks. The Atlanta Hawks knocked off the Charlotte Hornets big last night. And that means the Cavs and the Atlanta Hawks will now play each other to determine who is the final seed in the Eastern Conference, that eighth seed. And the winner of that game will go on to take on the number one seed, Miami Heat, on Sunday. So a quick turnaround, which is Easter Sunday, by the way. And then the loser will be out. It's win or go home. So the Cavs are now in a must-win situation. So Cavs, Hawks for kind of all the marbles on Friday night to see who gets in the playoffs and who goes home. So that's what we're looking at for Friday. I do want to talk real quick before we get a little bit more into the Cavs about the Rookie of the Year. So we have the Rookie of the Year award that should be coming out. By the way, Joe, I did make this graphic. You like the cartoon?
Beautiful.
You know, man. Like, okay, StatMuse puts together the cartoons, but the rest of the graphics I did on my own. So a little tap on the back there, but it is kind of pretty though. It does look good. So the three candidates for Rookie of the Year this year are going to be Evan Mobley of the Cavs, who was the third pick in the draft. It's going to be Scotty Barnes, who was the fourth pick in the draft out of Florida State. Evan Mobley, if I didn't say it, was for, out of USC. And then Cade Cunningham, who was the first overall pick in the draft out of Oklahoma State. Jalen Green, the second pick overall, also had a nice year, but not good enough to be in this conversation. I believe Evan Mobley is still the betting favorite for Rookie of the Year, but if we look at some of their numbers, very, very comparable in a lot of statistical categories. So Mobley, if we go down the line, 15 points, 8.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and 1.7 blocks a game. One of the best defensive players in the league already at 20 years old. Just incredible. Scotty Barnes is kind of that do-it-all. And, you know, if I had to compare Evan Mobley to somebody, I'm comparing him right now to Kevin Garnett. I know that's a high praise early on. So we will, you know, see what he develops into. And, you know, he's got a lot of room to grow body, you know, muscular and whatnot, but he can just leap and get up there and block. and his defensive prowess is not given enough credit, in my opinion. Scotty Barnes, if I have to compare him to someone, is probably the way he plays, a Scotty Pippen type player. Obviously not to that level either, but he is your, you know, prototypical, like, in between 3-4 kind of position. But again, 15.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, and 1 steal per game. So Scotty Barnes, something else he has going for him is he has the benefit of his team is really moved up with the Raptors getting in to the 5th spot in the Eastern Conference playoff. And then you got Cade Cunningham, who was the number one pick out of Oklahoma State. Really, really did a nice job with a bad, bad Detroit Pistons team. The record is not great for the Pistons. However, you could argue he might have had to do more on his own because of what, you know, it was surrounding him. You know, Scotty Barnes has a really nice team around him in Toronto. Evan Mobley's got some really nice pieces with Jared Allen and Darius Garland. So Cade Cunningham, 17.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, and 1.2 steals per game. So kind of a do-it-all player. I don't really have a player comp for him, but I think he is just going to be that prototypical kind of do-it-all wing, can shoot the ball, but can handle it from a point position as well. So
do you think if I ever put you on the court for one period, you could do at least have one number in either points, rebounds, assists, or blocks? Well, you have a whole period to do it.
Well, I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
Points. And here's why. Here's why. Because I think they would look at me and they would be like, this dude ain't doing anything. And one thing I can do, I'm not super athletic. I used to be obviously much more athletic and could do stuff, but I think I could probably, you know, I'm 40 years old now. So, you know, I'm a man, I'm 40, but
a grown ass man,
but I think they would look at me and be like, this guy's not doing anything. So we're just, I think they're just going to leave me alone where, you know, then they can double somebody else, hopefully like hit me open for an open jumper and I can still shoot it a little bit. So I think that would be my best case opportunity would be to score. So
you're not going in the paint.
I would get in there on defense. Offensively, I don't know. I think those guards are so damn fast. They would just, you know, anytime I had the ball, they would probably
swipe off of me. A 0% chance.
Yeah,
assist maybe. Maybe an assist.
Yeah, you know what? If they pass it to me, you know what? Somebody's running at me. I'm going to get rid of that thing real fast.
Like, oh, shit.
And be like, yeah. And hopefully, you know, he takes one dribble or spots up and shoots it and makes it. So I'm going to say probably scoring a point at some point. Or maybe they go to the hack-a-shack method and I go to the free throw line. I could definitely hit a free throw. So, yeah, that's my answer.
All right,
let's go to some of the older guys, but the definite MVPs of the NBA. So I put on their MVP takes center stage because all three of these guys you could label at the center position. Joel Embiid, a true center. Nikola Jokic, a true center. Giannis is kind of that hybrid, can kind of do it all. But look at those numbers. Just unbelievable. All three guys averaging more than 27 points a game. Basically, Giannis and Embiid at 30 or more. All of them in averaging a double-double. Jokic, this is incredible, has the highest plus-minus in NBA history. Now, LeBron, I think, in 2009-10 might be up there. I think he's number one, two, or three. But to put this in perspective, the highest plus minus ever. So Jokic is not on a great Denver team. I think they're the 6th seed in the West. However, when he's on the court, so plus minus for anyone that doesn't know, the plus is how much you're up, how many points your team scores more than the other team versus when you're off the court. So his plus minus is the highest ever in the history of the NBA. So that's just incredible. Giannis, you just got to put him in there because of what he does for his team. And Joel Embiid is personally, I've seen him play the most this year. And personally, to me, he should be the MVP. I think if I had to vote, I would go Nikola Jokic, just because of if you take him off the team, I don't think they even make the playoffs. I think if you take Giannis off the team, they're probably still in the playoffs, but they're going to be a low seed. And if you take Embiid off the team, they're probably, you know, in that 8-9 conversation in the Eastern Conference. But, you know, either way, any one of these three guys is deserving. So I'm going to say it finishes Jokic, Embiid, Giannis in that order. But actually, if I'm voting, I'm going Embiid, Jokic, Antetokounmpo. So we'll see what happens, but sharing some of their stats and incredible stats. So any one of those three could be easily win that award.
I got to be able to pronounce people's last names to enjoy the sport. I mean, these guys are getting ridiculous. Exactly. Where's Dave Smith?
Exactly. Dave Smith. Well, and look at, actually, I'm glad you pointed that out. Nikola Jokic, I have to admit, I can't think where he's from. Obviously, a European country. Giannis is from Greece, and Joel Embiid, I believe, has some African heritage where he grew up and then moved to the United States into college. So, you know, it's pretty incredible that all three of those guys are, you know, non-US born players that have now kind of taken over the league. So, and this is a very guard heavy league. All three of those guys are 7 foot tall. Just incredible. Just incredible. So, real quick, let's touch on the Cavs and the Hawks. The Cavs and the Hawks have played four times this year. The Hawks have unfortunately won the last three meetings. The Hawks kind of struggled at first in the beginning of the year. The Cavs got them in the first game this season, 101-95. They played New Year's Eve. The Hawks beat the Cavs by three, and then played two games fairly recently, both in Atlanta. Atlanta Hawks win 124-116. And then most recently, the Hawks kind of, pulled away late in a 131-107 win. Hawks have come on late. We obviously know they have one of the most dynamic players in the league. He's the second best point guard right now in the league in Trae Young. And obviously the Cavs have a great, great point guard themselves in Darius Garland. So let's look at the comparables. So Trae Young versus Darius Garland. This is going to be the matchup of the game. Trae Young averaging 28, about 4 rebounds, about 10 assists per game, and a steal, shooting 38% from the three-point line, where Darius Garland, his numbers have been increasing all season, about 22-3-9 and a steal per game. And he's also shooting 38% from the 3-point line. So that is where this game is going to be won, those guards. But, you know, Hunter for the Hawks is going to be an X factor. Mobley will be an X factor. And I'm really, really hoping, I don't know the status of Jared Allen, but hoping he will get back in the game soon. So looking at the Cavs, some of, you know, the main guys, they've been rolling out there. You got Garland, you got Okoro, LeVert, really, he's just been struggling shooting, but if he can get it going, he can carry you for a game. Markkanen and Mobley. And then if you can get Jared Allen back on the court, that just changes the identity of this Cleveland Cavaliers team for what they can do. Kevin Love obviously has stepped up his role this year. Jetty Osman, Lamar Stevens, and Rajon Rondo played a lot of minutes the other night. So we'll see what we get out of those guys for this next win or go home game. So Jared Allen to me is obviously the big difference. If the Cavs can get Jared Allen going, get him in, even if he can play 15 to 20 minutes, that makes a huge, huge difference on the defensive end more so than the offensive end. So we'll see what happens there. Again, this game is, tomorrow night, Friday night, 7:30. I always still want to say the Q. You know, it used to be Gundarena, then the Q. Now it's Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. So it's at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Cavs have the better regular season record by one game. So this game will be Friday night in Cleveland at 7:30. And then right next door, you have the Guardians going on. So want to take you really, really quick. This is a long list, but I'm going to just take you through some of my favorite NBA top players for this season. I had Joel Embiid, who we already talked about as my number one player this season, Nikola Jokic at number two, Giannis at number three, Steph Curry at number four, Kevin Durant, who just lit up the Cavs the other night too, at number five. Jason Tatum has really, really come on for the Boston Celtics at six. Luka, you could put up there. Luka's kind of one of those guys. I don't know really what position he plays. Is he a point guard? Is he a small forward? Is he a power forward? But he's just an all-around great player. Devin Booker, you could put up there in the MVP conversation, but I think Chris Paul, his teammate, would take some votes away from him. You also have Ja Morant. You got Trae Young up there, who the Cavs are going to be taking on. And then just skipping down the list, I had Darius Garland as my number 20 player in the NBA this season, the Cavs point guard. And then my honorable mention, my plus one, would be Jared Allen for the Cavs, because his defense, and he's averaging 16 and 11 per game, but his defense just alone makes the Cavs go and lets them do a lot of different things on the defensive end. So that is a look at my NBA top 25 list. Let me know what I got right, what I got wrong, where you agree and where you disagree. So, all right, let's shift gears. Let's talk about the Cleveland Guardians. The Cleveland Guardians started off 0-2. They scored one run in their first two games. They scored one run in the first game and then were shut out in extra innings in their second game. So they lost 3-1 in the first game. They lose 1-0 in the second game. And then they put up 17 runs in the third game. And then 10 runs in the fourth game, 10 runs again against the Reds the other day, and then 7 runs, getting a 7-3 victory yesterday versus the Cincinnati Reds to sweep that two-game series in Cincinnati. So the Cleveland Guardians are off today. They will open up at home tomorrow. I believe the time is still set for 7 o'clock. So you're going to have the Guardians at 7. You're going to have the Cavs right next door at 7:30. So it's going to be a busy, busy night in downtown Cleveland. A lot of fun if you're down there by both stadiums. Should be a lot of fun in downtown Cleveland. So
if you're the skipper over there, do you let your offense go gangbuster this early in the season and put up numbers like that?
You get as many hits as you can at any point in time, because this team has a lot of flaws on the offensive end, at least from what we thought coming into the season. And the first two games kind of are like, these guys can't hit. You know, there's a lot of problems. And I was one of those guys. It's like, well, they didn't spend any money on the offseason. They finally re-signed some of their players. But their top three guys in their order have really been hitting. Miles Straw, center fielder, they locked him up for the next 6 years. Nice. They have the young kid who we're going to talk about in a minute, Stephen Kwan, who was a rookie that wasn't even one of their top prospects, who's basically hitting like 700 this year, getting on base. Like, he's already set a major league record in the first six games or first five games for how many times he's got on base. And then you have in the third spot, Jose Ramirez, your best player, who has finally, the Cleveland Guardians have spent a lot of money invested in him. So he is also with the team through 2028. So a lot of their best young core players are signed for the foreseeable future, which is great.
And that is one thing that impresses me about their front office, is they're always on the bottom end of spending money.
Yes.
But somehow they'll always run across great prospects.
100%. That is, I mean, that's, you can't say a more truer statement, because that's as good as it gets. They're doing so much with comparably so little, yeah. You know? So,
but then you can't hang on to them. You get a Sabathia and right. They go, right.
Well, and then, you know, we had even talked 2 years ago about Mike Clevinger. Remember yep. Mike Clevinger?
For sure.
And, you know, they make this trade. They in that trade, they get Owen Miller, who's on fire right now. They get Josh Naylor, who's hurt, but will be back in the lineup soon. Your starting first baseman. You get Austin Hedges, your starting catcher in that. You get a couple other prospects. Their top prospect in the minor leagues, Arias, is going to be coming up soon. And he was all a part of that trade. Plus, there was one other player in that trade. So basically, you're getting a 5-for-1 deal. And Clevinger has hardly even pitched for the Padres. He's been so injury prone. Yeah. So it's that looks like an absolute steal
for sure
for Cleveland right now. So in the next couple series, they got the Giants, they got the White Sox, and they have those New York Yankees. So they will be home against the Giants and the White Sox and then travel to New York City next weekend. Let's go through some of these hitting stats. And again, I do want to give credit to StatMuse because they do such a nice job. They like turn all the players in there, their images into cartoon type characters. And it's kind of neat because it just gives a different perspective on each player. So I think that's really cool. So just looking at some of the things that and again, I almost said Indians. We're going to have to do that swear jar thing. Blur it out. But they lead right now. They are first in the major leagues in runs with 45, first in hits with 70. They are first in triples with 5. They are first in home runs with 9. They are first in RBIs with 44. Top 3 in stolen bases. They have the number 1 batting average at .308. Number 1 on base percentage, basically getting on base at 38% of the time, and the number 1 slugging percentage, which is about 52%, which is fantastic by the number. So the Guardians doing a great job. And I've watched a few of the games. I haven't seen every pitch of every inning, but I've seen a bunch of the games. And Rick Manning, who is the color commentator for Bally Sports, he calls them the Indians almost every game, at least once or twice. And I'm like, we can all right. kind of relate yep. to that. Yep. You know, you just get so used to it. So going through some of their individual numbers, Miles Straw, who I mentioned, leadoff hitter playing center field, 9-for-25 on the season already with 5 walks. Stephen Kwan, 10-of-19, which so he's hitting, you know, north of 500, 7 walks, 2 doubles, a triple, and 5 RBIs in your 2 spot. Jose Ramirez, 12-of-25, 3 home runs, 14 RBIs in 6 games. Franmil Reyes, still looking for it, 5-for-28. He has 10 strikeouts already on the season. Owen Miller, who was one of those guys in that Mike Clevinger trade, he is a great, great prospect because he can play first base, second base, shortstop, third base, and some outfield. So he is an all do it all kind of player. But so far this season, 11-for-21, 2 home runs, 6 RBIs, and 5 doubles already. Oscar Mercado, who's one of those guys that, you know, if he can't figure it out, they're probably going to get rid of. But so far this season, not hitting for a high average, but already has 3 home runs, including 1 grand slam, 1 double, 1 triple, and 9 RBIs on the season.
Triple, that's rare,
right? Yeah. And the Indians, there it is. The Guardians lead the league in triples. They already have 5 on the season, which is pretty incredible. Andres Jimenez, who was in the Lindor trade, as well as Ahmed Rosario, he is 4-of-14 with a triple, a home run, and 3 RBIs this season, whereas Ahmed Rosario, 10-of-28 already. Austin Hedges, though, here comes the bad. I've told you the good. Here comes the bad. Austin Hedges, the catcher, you know, and again, catchers are there to control the pitching staff. Any offense you get is usually a bonus, but let's just say we're not getting any offense.
Just a bonus.
0-of-16 at the plate, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. Yu Chang, I've seen enough Yu Chang. He, like, in my opinion, play the younger guys. He's done. 0-7, 5 strikeouts. And then Bobby Bradley is only 0-4. He hasn't played a whole lot this season, but just can't quite figure it out. And this is a guy with a ton of power, a ton of potential, but just can't quite figure it out quite yet at the major league level. So right,
same question.
Yeah.
Justin gets 9 at-bats.
Oh, God, no.
What's his stats?
Oh, Mom.
Wu-Chang?
I'm probably more along the lines of Austin Hedges. Okay. You know, I could probably get on base and walk, or I'll take one for the team. But I will say, because I always thought I was like my best sport was baseball. Like I always liked basketball, and I enjoy watching football the best. I played all three sports at least a little bit, but baseball, I was a pretty good pitcher. And I was a pretty good fielder. Outfielder or first base is usually where I played, but I was not a good hitter. I'm not ashamed to admit that. Like I always felt like I had potential, but I could just never put it together at the plate. You know, I had a couple games where I'd, you know, go 2 for 4, or, you know, 2 for 5 or whatever, but, or just get a hit here and there. But I was just never a good hitter. Like, past probably little league, I could hit the ball. And then once I got to like, you know, a little bit, you know, where guys are throwing in the 70s, 80s, I just had a hard time hitting the ball. And maybe I just didn't practice enough. I don't know what it was, but I could throw that hard, but I could never hit. I could never equal it at the plate. So I'm going to say if I got enough at bats and I knew what pitch was coming, I could at least probably put it in play. But I would need hours of batting practice beforehand, because if you have you ever seen that behind the umpire visual of yes. like I don't know how anyone hits the ball honestly in baseball.
It's coming.
It is one, it's moving. I mean, one, the speed alone.
Right.
Two, I mean, the movement on some of those pitches. And like, did you ever see someone when they're behind the plate and a foul ball goes straight back and you jump? Like, that's how I feel sometimes. Like if I'd be in the batter's box, how I would react to some of those, because, you know, I think anybody can hit something that's straight if you practice, you know, whether it's 80 miles an hour, 90 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour, if you practice enough and you know it's coming and it's straight down the middle, you can be okay enough to at least hit the ball. But when you mix in a sinker or a slider or a curveball or a changeup, like I don't care how good you are, you really have to, you know, be on your game to hit those major league pitches. So I mean, I don't know if I can get into a high school batting, like a batter's box right now and hit some high school pitchers. So I don't know.
But my stats would look like this, because it's, okay, so I played high school baseball.
Yeah,
junior
yeah.
varsity when I was a mm-hmm. freshman, and varsity when I was a sophomore or junior senior. And I was 103 pounds, right?
Right.
My strike zone was this.
That's right? True.
So when I'm looking down third base, I'm like, don't look, because he's going to tell me to take again and again.
Yep.
I never got to swing at the ball because every coach said, he's just going to walk you, and you're fast as lightning,
yeah.
So you're going to score.
You know what? A walk is as good as a single.
It was not as exciting to the person doing the walking.
That is true. That is true. You get on base, though, you can do just as much damage.
Yeah.
And that's the advanced analytics that's so driven right now. If you can get on base, that's what it's all about right now. And right now it's about the, you know, like we don't care if you it's either get on base and hit home runs, or go for that. And if you strike out, you strike out, you know? So
we're here the most embarrassing baseball moment.
Please. Anything. So, we're here for all the embarrassment we yes. can get.
And so that was my MO, was that I never got to really swing. But this one time in a playoff game,
okay.
Right, I was up, right? I knew that I'm so glad I wasn't a pinch runner in this mm-hmm. one. I actually got behind the plate and the coach did not say take. Right. So I swung at it and I hit this little like bloopy one that had some spin on it. And it, the third baseman went the wrong direction. It went the other. Mm-hmm. So I got on first base. I didn't know what to do. Right. I was so excited. I got the swing over it. So I'm like, what do I do? Like when I do it, I'm like dusting off. And like, then I
run
and I look over at the, well, I'm getting ready for the pitcher to throw, but I'm not paying attention. I'm not even standing on the base.
Okay.
And here I'm bewildered, not knowing what to do, looking to see what the coach is telling me to do next.
Yeah, yeah.
And he throws a move to first base. And like, I was on the base for like 30 seconds and I got picked off. The most embarrassing.
That's
finally
great.
Get my moment.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, I'm never having you swing on it again. He can't control himself.
That's great. That's fantastic. I mean, we, you know, and everybody has those moments. One, my one of my most embarrassing baseball moments was I was on second. One of my teammates hits a single, I think, to right field, if I'm not mistaken. I'm rounding third. I'm coming home, and I see the catcher. The catcher totally faked me out. So he went like this to put a tag down. I slid 2 feet before home plate, and the ball wasn't even there. So I had to crawl the last 2 feet and touch the plate as the ball went over the catcher's head. So at least I got the last laugh and scored the run. But I will vividly remember that.
The next morning when they did highlights from the baseball game, I was part of the highlights, and they played the song, "I Saw the Sign." And it opened up my eyes because that's
a little ace of base.
Yes.
I love it.
So I got totally mocked on next morning newscast.
That's great though. You know, that's what it's all
remember
about.
Remember it forever.
Exactly. And you know, your teammates probably won't remember if you guys won or lost that game, but they'll remember that moment. Right. And that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. Let's go to something that might be a little bit easier to do, and that would be pitching. Now, pitching is not easy, but I'm hypothetically saying if you and I had to go ahead and take the mound, there's a much greater chance that we're going to be able to get a batter out than if we're in the box and got a swing to get on base. So
I bet you it's harder to hit slower balls than faster.
So you know what?
Be thrown off.
You know, in some of those big time, like blowout games, they'll put a position player in and they'll, you know, to save your bullpen. So they'll put like, you know, your second string second baseman in or whatever, and he'll throw 65 miles an hour. And those guys just aren't used to hitting that speed. So, you know, every now and then they'll hit a home run or something or hit it hard. But a lot of times the pitcher produces the power that, you know, so if it's coming in at 90, it's going to come off the bat at 100. So if it's only coming in at 65, 70, it's only going to come out about that fast too. So you have a greater chance of getting a batter out than you do of getting in the box and, you know, getting on base or, you know, getting an RBI or, you know, getting a base hit or whatever it might be.
So next time you're in the batting cages, go to Slow Sally and it'll mess up your time. It will be.
But again, I think if you're, anybody can get in a batting cage, and if you time it up enough, you can hit a 90, 100 mile, maybe not 100 mile. You can hit a 90 mile an hour fastball if you know what's coming. But if occasionally that thing's not calibrated and puts one in your head, you're gonna think twice, and you might not be hitting the next one. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Like we'll see what ends up happening with the Guardians pitching, but that should be the strength of their team. But right now, doing a pretty nice job. Ninth overall in the major leagues in ERA. Overall, doing a pretty good job keeping guys off the base with walks. They have hit 6 batters already this year. But overall, pretty nice job for the Guardians. And we'll see, because that should be the strength of their team for the entirety of the season. So we'll see what happens the rest of the season. So real quick, one more look at baseball. This is my fantasy baseball draft that we did last year that was based on all movie characters. Joe, do you have a favorite movie character baseball player?
Wesley Snipes.
Willie Mays Hayes?
Willie Mays Hayes.
Okay. Did you know Willie Mays Hayes, or excuse me, not Willie Mays Hayes, Wesley Snipes played another baseball character as well in I believe it was called The Fan with Robert De Niro too. I can't remember the name, but he played for the San Francisco Giants. Robert De Niro was this crazy stalker fan and stalked Wesley Snipes's character in that movie. So another good character there, you know, for a baseball thing. But I thought the Guardians would have been putting up such great stats that this was fun. We did this last year and I just wanted to revisit it, but I'd probably have to go if I was, you know, I think Willie Mays Hayes, that's hard not to pick there. But I would probably say, you know, what's his name from the Sandlot, Benny the Jet Rodriguez. You know, I think like growing up as a kid, I was roughly about the same age. And I think that's kind of like someone I emulated as a baseball player. So wasn't quite to that level, at least comparatively as him. He was like the best player on his team. I couldn't quite relate to that. I was probably like the third or fourth best player on mine, but you know, just some good, but my most random one, you got to say Tony Maselli from Who's the Boss, the second baseman. You know what I mean? Just
that was like one episode where they started him as a baseball
but
player.
Exactly. But I think the opening theme song of Who's the Boss, I can't think how it goes. I'm not even going to try to do it, but he is playing in, like, I think for the St. Louis Cardinals or in their minor league system. And I think he gets injured, but I think that's in the opening credits throughout the entire series. I'd have to revisit. I haven't seen that show in 30 years, but Tony Maselli, by the way, Tony Danza, I'm not going to tell the story now, but if you see me off air, I have a great Tony Danza story that may or may not have happened. So it's a great urban legend about Tony Danza that's not quite appropriate to tell on air, that maybe I'll share off air. All right, Joe,
here we go.
Let's get into the drama. Well, we just got a couple more minutes left, but let's talk real quick about Baker Reagan Mayfield, who he likes to sign his middle name in his letters. So I will just come out and say this. When Baker Mayfield was drafted, I was excited. When he won, you know, came in and played that game against the Jets and ended that long losing streak, I was pumped. When he got the Browns to help to get the Browns to the playoffs, I was as ecstatic as I could be. You know, you guys can go back and look at old shows with Joe and I talking about that. And we were so pumped. We thought this guy was our future. And then this year happens, and obviously there were some injuries and some drama and stuff like that. So it's not the storybook ending that we thought it might be. So Joe, you know, and we're not even going to touch the Deshaun Watson thing, except for the fact that, you know, he was peeved off that they were looking kind of like, you know, it's kind of like you're with your girlfriend, but you see another, a better looking girl, and you're kind of looking at her instead of looking at him. So what are your thoughts on Baker Mayfield?
All right, so I think he got a raw deal, and I think, you know, this turned it, I mean, football's a business, and mm-hmm. it's really tough. Like, you're gonna play the business then when it's contract time.
Correct.
So the owner is gonna play the best talent on field angle because it's just a business.
Mm-hmm.
But it's awkward because you want to formulate a team that works well together. And mm-hmm. when you have disloyalty, that's like the probably number one killer. I'm
sure.
here for the paycheck.
Sure.
I know that if I screw up, they're going to get rid of me anyway. So
right.
I'm all about the paycheck. That does not, that for long term, that sucks. Short term, you can win some games, but
right.
long term, it sucks.
Okay. Okay. The big thing, you know, and I was kind of like anti OBJ when that whole stuff was going out. And going on, I think his last game, that was actually Halloween against the Steelers. But the thing that really, like, kind of surprised me now, you know, having a little hindsight looking back on it, is there was really no support from Baker's teammates that came out and kind of supported Baker. There was a lot of support for OBJ, and I'm not saying one's right, one's wrong, but there was a lot of turmoil in the locker room, from what I understand, going on. And I think a lot of their teammates were peeved at him. They're like, well, if you're so injured and you can play in all these other games, he sat out the last game of the season too, because he sat down with his agent and his family, he said. So if it was like, if you were fine the rest of these games, what are you just sitting out because we're not in it anymore? Because whatever. So I don't know. So I'm going to read this one quote. He says, I feel disrespected 100%. I was told one thing and they completely did another. Now, you and I aren't in Berea. We're not in the front office. We're not on the phone. We don't know what was said, what was not said. But I have a feeling that Baker, this is just my interpretation of what happened. I think he was told, you're our guy unless we can get an Aaron Rodgers, we can get a Russell Wilson, we can get a Deshaun Watson. That's kind of my interpretation of, we're only going to go out there and look for an elite quarterback. But they weren't going to bring in a Mitch Trubisky or a Marcus Mariota or someone equal or maybe not quite to Baker's level. So that's kind of my interpretation. What do you say?
Yeah, that's about right. But you know, being from the fans' perspective, they're never gonna let us in on the problems behind the scenes.
Right.
So, you know, all along with OBJ, it could have been Baker's fault the whole time. He might have had a thing against him and didn't want to throw to him and whatever. And maybe that's why you saw nobody coming to his rescue. So you do want to, if that's the case, you want that guy out of your locker room because you need, you know, to meld and mesh together. So.
No doubt. Okay. All right. That's fair. And then one other quote, this was from this podcast the other night. It said, when people are so critical of it, I would love to show up at somebody's cubicle and just boo the shit out of them and watch them crumble. Now, I don't work in a cubicle. You don't work in a cubicle. There's people out there that work in cubicles. But, I mean, if Baker Mayfield wants to come to my job and boo me, then, I mean, have at it. You know, like, and I understand kind of what he's saying, but you're a paid professional athlete. And this is part of the deal. Now, if this is at Oklahoma and Texas Tech, where I'm sure that happened on the road plenty of times, Baker's just opening the door for self-criticism. For sure. And I think it shows a little bit of lack of, you know, or lack of maturity. It shows immaturity in, you know, he's 27 now. It's not like he's this young pup, 21, 22 out of college. He's 27. Yeah. And it's time to grow up. And obviously he feels slighted and I totally get that, but put that motivation into your next project, whether that's the Seahawks or the Panthers or whatever it might be, and play it out on the field. Don't go to social media. Don't go on a podcast and complain about the Browns. And again, I haven't heard the podcast. I've heard little clips of it, but, I don't know. What are your thoughts on him speaking out and being in the social media spotlight? Well,
you know, the dude did a lot of trash talking on the field, and I like that about him. I love impassioned players.
Yes.
Bill Cowers, I thought he was a great coach because of how much he got in, you know, into the game.
100%.
So, but your maturity is on point. Like if your guys don't respect you, right? The people that you're supposed, you can't be a leader on the team. And I almost felt like when I was watching the dude on the field, he was in control only because everybody was trying to keep up with his fire. You know what I mean? But this feels like sour grapes where he's going around, not for a productive cause, but he's a little angry and a little hurt by how he was treated.
Yeah. And I think the thing that makes him great is his biggest weakness is you got to have a little bit of thicker skin. And you believe me, you know, I've been a head coach and, you know, and at the high school level, that doesn't compare to an NFL quarterback, but you know, there's going to be times when people are going to come at you and you just gotta rise above it and be better and tune out any negativity and just focus on yourself and your team and your goals and go from there. But
let me say something a little inappropriate. It's just a tiny bit.
Go for it. Hey, this is your studio, man.
So I look at that. I feel disrespected. Mm-hmm. He's the dude who started out his NFL career after having plunged a flag of the opposing team into the 50-yard line. Isn't that disrespect?
That is an excellent, excellent point. I think there were some people that like weren't quite sure about him when the Browns drafted him. Obviously that happened down the road in Columbus after Oklahoma beat Ohio State in 2017. And that is an excellent point, you know? And again, I think that passion is what makes him great. However, it's what got him arrested. It's what, you know, makes him maybe think he can make some throws that he shouldn't make. And again, I think what makes him great is what also can be his biggest detriment at times. So he has a lot of growing up to do. And believe me, I will support whoever the quarterback is of the Browns, whether it was Bernie, whether it was freaking Brandon Whedon.
Can we get Bernie back?
Bernie, can you still play? I think we're pretty all right at our quarterback position now, obviously off the field issues. We have to deal with, but, you know, I think talent wise, we have the best quarterback we've ever had. But we'll see what comes of that with, on-field production, but, Baker is obviously going to move on and hopefully the Browns are able to find a trade partner for him. Baker wanted to go to the Colts. The Colts really didn't seem to want him. Houston obviously didn't want him in the trade. Carolina, that's still up for grabs, but I think Seattle probably makes the most sense.
Did we get a wide receiver in return?
With the DK Metcalf thing with, I mean, that to me is a pipe dream because you got to pay him next year a lot of money, but you know, you can move some money around, figure it out. So if the Seahawks are willing to take a second round pick this year and Baker for DK Metcalf, I'm in.
Taking our entire draft away from us. There's nothing.
But
to
you
watch.
Know what? Think about Brandon Weeden, Johnny Manziel, and throw in whatever other quarterback, Brady Quinn. That's three first round draft picks there. Would you rather have those guys? Or would you rather have Deshaun Watson? You know what I'm saying?
No doubt.
You know? And so it's like draft picks are great. We've been told how valuable and how great they are. But if those guys don't turn out to be actual players, then they're just a wasted pick or just taking up salary or taking up a roster spot when they're not, you know, potential will get people fired.
Right.
Whereas production will get you wins and get you in the playoffs and make you some money. So
can I ask you one question about roster? Like I was on
just one, Joe,
just uno. I was reading an article this morning about some return specialist that is fired. I didn't know anything about him until I read that article. Like where'd he come from?
So his last name's Grant, Jakeem Grant, I believe. He originally played with the Miami Dolphins, moved on to Chicago, has been a Pro Bowl returner the last two seasons. So I think he's one of those guys that could be a sneaky wide receiver. He's a little bit in the mold of a Demetric Felton, a shorter, shiftier guy. But I think he can play some special teams for you and do a great job, which the Browns have not had a good kick or punt returner really since Cribs, you know. Right. So hopefully they can do some stuff there. And you know, if he can help you out in kick coverage, and if he can help you out you know, maybe being a third down wide receiver as your fifth or sixth guy, you know, then you use him. So I think the Browns are going to have a lot of weapons, and they're not done adding pieces, but they have Baker Mayfield's contract to get off the books.
Yes.
And I feel like they're going to have to eat probably about half of that, which is fine. But that's what's holding up possibly Jadeveon Clowney signing, possibly Jarvis Landry. You're going to have to sign some draft picks. So we'll see what the Browns end up doing. There's a lot of interesting names at wide receiver. I still think they need one more wide receiver, whether it's in the draft or whether it's in free agency. And they really need a couple players on that defensive line. So, but this team right now is built to win. So we'll see what happens. And, you know, we're going to take next week off of the show, but the week after it's already NFL draft week. So we're going to do some draft talk here in what's today, April, I don't know what, 14th. So in 2 weeks from tonight, I believe the draft starts. Yeah. So we'll get on that. So we will have plenty of draft coverage for you coming up in not next week, but the following week. Maybe next week we'll throw up a best of show or something, but check out our social media page at 330 Sports Show. I have plenty of sports content out there for you. So
here's a comment from Jason.
Oh, yeah.
If Baker were to go to Pittsburgh, they would have the number one and two winningest QBs in the 23-year history of their stadium. I almost want him for that reason alone.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, Baker to Pittsburgh is something that could happen. We don't know. So we will see what happens, but
it would make some interesting interconference games.
Right? And very, very well by the next time we have a show, it could happen. I don't think the Browns are going to straight up release him though. So, and I think something could happen during the draft. I think that's a big possibility. So we will see. Stay tuned for Joe. I'm Justin. Happy Easter out there to everyone this weekend. And we will talk to you guys soon. Go Tribe. Go Guardians. Tribe counts. All right. Go Cavs. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.